And I am so excited for self-driving cars. Anyone else? I am very. Not few people, right? Other people are afraid. Don't be. It's going to be great. Don't be scared. Ask yourself this. Have you ever walked into a grocery store and had those doors just like pinch you? Never, right? So imagine that automation technology improved by a factor of a million. That's what they're putting on cars. It's going to be okay. You still don't believe me? Would you rather there be like two dudes inside every grocery store just manually sliding those doors as your family walks in, right? One of the guys is texting, the other is high. That's what you want? Because when you're driving, that's what's happening around you constantly.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 118. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, buddy?
Pete, I'm just thankful to be alive. I was driving this morning, and I nearly got in a wreck, and the day before, I had this, like, gnarly, crazy accident happen. I'm telling you, no one is driving their cars anymore. They're on their phones, they're swerving. Like, it's actively getting worse out there.
Are you saying we need smart cars to be driving?
All I can say is when I'm on the road, I assume everyone else is out to kill me. And then I see a Tesla and the guy doesn't have his hands on the wheel. I'm like, okay, that one I don't have to worry about.
I'm trying to wondering if this is a real experience or you're just trying to force feed a segue into this awesome podcast that we have this week.
Look on my Twitter feed from like 11 o'clock two nights ago. You'll see it. So.
Nice. Well, interesting segue because we do happen to have an old friend of the show, Jad Elzine, on this week. But we're talking about something totally different, and that is artificial intelligence and machine learning. So, Jad, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, Pete and John, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, Jad's one of the unique folks that has been on the podcast as a guest, but he's also actually been a co-host a couple of times. So always happy to have Jad on the call. Jad, what have you been up to these days?
Well, it's been a little busy. I think I've been in my new role for about a year now in the cloud management office of CTO. I've been having a fantastic time, but also been relatively quiet, as you can probably tell by my blog and others.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, we're doing a lot of amazing stuff, and I'm going to be able to talk a little bit about some of the exciting things coming to fruition this year, and you'll hear about VMworld. But at the same time, it really limits what I can say and talk and do, and nobody's asking the hows, so I'm not out there explaining it. So it's resulted in a little bit of a social quiet period, but I have promised a lot of folks that I'm going to get right back on there ahead of VMworld. So
yeah, that's the thing with working in the office of the CTO is like that is a future looking role. And so for folks like yourself that have been very front facing and, you know, usually talking about what's already on the truck, that's a different role, right? Because you're visionary, you're focusing on what we're going to do in the future, and it's not really something that you can talk about. So I'm excited that you're able to at least share some vision with us this week.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
So I caught up with you at the Charlotte VMUG a couple of weeks ago, and we had a side chat, very small, but you shared a little bit about the fact that you've been dabbling in AI and ML. And I think that's something that we don't really talk a lot about at VMware. And so this is exciting for me. Maybe we should, you know, before we dive too deep, why don't you set a very general introduction into, you know, what's the difference between artificial intelligence and machine learning? Are they the same thing, or is there a certain angle of that that we're using at VMware or plan to use?
Yeah. So I'll start at the top. There's a lot of activity in this field, primarily because of the economies that are available today versus what used to be available. But let me just start at the beginning. So machine learning is math, right? Machine learning is the data science of leveraging algorithms and data science to basically compute and calculate the algorithms that are being put in place. So there's there's this huge, vast thing called AI. Machine learning is a subset of AI. You essentially can't have artificial intelligence without the data science behind it. So the machine learning component plays a huge role. And so look at ML as a subset of AI. And then even inside of ML, there's something called deep learning or deep neural networks. So now this is where we take all of that math and we start nesting inputs and outputs and basically creating loops of algorithms that take the output of the previous algorithm into the output of a subsequent layer and you know being able to do that across massive swaths of resources. And that's what's called deep learning. So this is, without a visual, it's really hard to explain. But so you got AI. This is this large field. You've got machine learning, which is the math behind AI, and you've got deep learning, which is where you do a lot of the really hard stuff, right? It's more than just algorithms; it's layers and layers and layers of algorithms. Okay, so that's those are often mistakes. Let's just take a look at a couple of examples. When you're talking to Siri, I'm a Siri guy. When you're talking to Siri or Alexa or Watson or whoever it is, those are leveraging any number of algorithms, a ton of ML, but those are essentially AI platforms. But when you are building algorithms to accomplish a particular task or to overcome a limitation or to, provide a level of compute that you otherwise couldn't code, that's the machine learning stuff. And when you need to do that at some of our most difficult challenges, that's when you need deep learning. So there's all kinds of different layers here and a lot of confusion sometimes. In fact, I was talking to our own field when I kicked this off once and I said, hey, if a company is leading with a picture of Johnny Five from Short Circuit as their strategy for ML-enabled cloud management, run, right? That's not, robots are not the thing. That's not what we're doing here. So
yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, what is the first thing I think of when I think of artificial intelligence, machine learning? Like the basics back in the day would be like chess, right? Computer chess or something like that. Trying to figure out mathematically, you give it a certain
Kasparov. Yeah, the big battle of the chess master against the IBM.
Yeah, you give it a set of rules that says this is how to win, and the humans provide all the rules and basically let the computer do the math and determine what the right move is. But machine learning is so much more advanced than that, right? Because it's actually ingesting the data and then building its own rules based on what it's learned, right? Which is way more sophisticated than just the humans providing all the rules, correct?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you look at, so that example with Watson beating the chess champion is a very good example of how machine learning advanced the quote unquote intelligence of these machines. So not only did it calculate the right move, but it also calculated the potential outcome. And learned from the moves, calculating the potential outcome, and actually predicting the appropriate paths for Watson to win in chess. But now, because that was IBM, and that was just a couple decades ago, if you look at what Google did with AlphaGo, this is another example I use all the time. What Google's done is they challenged the world Go champion. And Go is one of the most difficult games available to human play. And what AlphaGo did, leveraging deep neural networks and a combination of these massive algorithms, was actually simulate the outcome of every possible move in Go, so that when the opponent would make a move, AlphaGo already knew that A was probably going to make that move and B exactly how to get ahead of that move. So out of six games, they ended up with this algorithm and millions and millions of virtual turns taken and outcomes virtually played, was able to win five out of the six matches. And shortly after that, if you look at the article, Google came back and said, we found the bug, we would have won all six now. So it's those types of things, and it's the access of just tremendous amounts of capacity and GPU that allows those types of things to happen. But more specifically, the use of reinforcement learning, which is one of the algorithms that I want to talk about today, one of the machine learning methodologies. But so what they did is they're able to learn and train the system based on the need to get a reward, right? So they go and they run these algorithms, and it's not an if else then, right? If else then is the old way of doing everything, right? Yeah. This is all about learning. And we go through and we virtualize, or we emulate playing a match. And then we determine, was that a good was that a good move? Would I have won with this move? And if it's yes, I get a reward. If it's no, there's no reward. Reinforcement learning is very much driven for the reward. So what they do is they go off and they play millions and millions and millions of virtual boards so that they get that reward function that's constantly reinforcing the intelligence. So then they can take that, transfer it into AlphaGo to play the opponent. And from the moment you start, AlphaGo is already confident in the outcome because it already understands the greatest path to victory with every single move the opponent does. And very similarly, if we look at, we actually use this example on our main stage at VMworld last year. If you look at what Waymo does, right? Waymo leverages reinforcement learning, and they, you know, one of the things that autonomous vehicles have to do that John's looking forward to is they actually have to map the entire globe. But let's just start here in the US or in San Fran. They have to map every single potential yield, stop, light, crosswalk, width, right? Lines, turns. I mean, it's just an infinite amount of resource or of data that they have to consume and know how to behave. So they've physically drove, I think the number was 6 million miles. They physically drove 6 million miles in total with all their autonomous vehicles out there. Obviously, they were reinforced by individual drivers behind the wheel.
Yeah.
To start mapping out these things. And then the driver would correct and the system would learn, et cetera. But then they take all that data and map data and satellite data and everything else. And they'll say, okay, well, we need to like quadruple down on this to be able to put a human life in this car. So they took reinforcement learning and they took a reinforcement learning approach and they actually virtually drove an additional 5 billion miles virtually without actual cars out there doing this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they need to do this type of thing to have the confidence out there. And it's, again, it's the economies that are available to us now, or the resources due to the economies of those resources that are available to us now. And these, you know, these algorithms that are actually decades old, some of them. Data science is a very old concept, but yeah, it's changing everything. And in my world, it's changing cloud management, and that's really what we want to pivot to.
Yeah, and that is my question. So I get Tesla, and I think it's an amazing story. I love the fact, you know, John and I, every time we go to Palo Alto, we see the self-driving cars, you know, the Google cars.
Yeah,
Waymo,
if you get too close to the Google campus, they start to outnumber normal cars.
Yeah.
And I get that. I see that. That's a consumer. I think that's a use case that everybody can relate to. But cloud management, how do I tie reinforcement learning to cloud management?
So it's a similar approach. Now, one of the things that Waymo is able to do is, for example, those 5 billion miles driven, right? There's reward function for every time I drive correctly or make the right turn or make the right decision. And that obviously is established over time. It's like a child growing up. But what's the most important part that applies to cloud management is that once I've taken that knowledge of the additional 5 billion miles on top of the 6 million miles physical, and I've been able to correlate that data, it's not that that's sitting somewhere in a Waymo cloud and as a car is driving, I have to reference it to determine what my next move is.
Okay.
So with reinforcement learning and a process called transfer learning, we're able to actually build that knowledge set and then transfer it to the onboard systems, so that I could make instant decisions based on this 6 billion mile plus pool of data without necessarily having any latency to determine whether or not I'm going to hit a stroller in front of me or veer off into a stop sign, right? So there's a whole other conversation about the ethics of what we're doing here, but how does a car make a decision? Most importantly for us is we want to be able to make the decision in real time or as real time as possible. So we need that data very close to possible. So now let's move to cloud management. From a cloud management perspective, we've always done the if-else management style, yep. Right? The vast majority of the industry has done if-else. There's this whole thing called AI ops, and that's largely where the industry is heading, but I think it's falsely used in a lot of ways today. But let's just talk about what we are able to do today that we weren't able to do in the past. So I was around when we acquired Integrion. That was 9 years ago now, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And when we were out there, Integrion, which is now Viralize Ops, when we were out there, we're talking about these amazing algorithms that, you know, we acquired Integrion for the IP associated with these analytics and these algorithms that are patented. Remember all those days?
Oh yeah.
And while
determines what is an acceptable latency.
Yes, exactly. So you know, and all of it was true, right? They were algorithms. They were looking at trends of data so we can do things like capacity management and right sizing and all that stuff. But algorithms are massive if-then statements, right? It's churning a bunch of data and says, okay, well, here's a trend, here's a historical. I'm going to correlate all of that, and I'm going to give you an estimate of what the future looks like and some actions and activities. And of course, we can trigger actions. We can do alerting. We could do all this other stuff. And we could estimate that based on this trend, here's where you're going to be. Basic algorithms. That has largely evolved because we have the ability now to not only consume the data that's known, but we're also able to predict the outcome of the change you do. So that's one thing that actually ops, as of today, has already enabled through a fun project called Captain Crunch. But taking a step forward, none of that really takes us closer to the self-driving data center. And that's the topic that I share in that the video we're going to post. And the real impact of cloud management is being able to leverage some of these learnings from the industry, like what Waymo's done, what AlphaGo has done, what other verticals are doing with machine learning and reinforcement learning specifically, and then being able to tie that to cloud management. So let's just take an example. Today, I have an alert that says, if resource consumption 70, give me an alert. And while I give you that alert, go ahead and find a new home for that machine because resource on that vSphere host is at 70%. And then leverage DRS, which by the way, has its own algorithms and does a great job at that. And so trigger vMotion or leverage vSphere. So this is ops helping vSphere at a cloud scale, right?
Yep.
Now, that works great. Okay, well, what if my resource constraint isn't associated with the underlying host, but what if it is because something isn't configured properly? So what if I'm having a memory issue or a read IO issue, for example.
Yeah, something that's going to be a problem no matter where I go.
Yeah, not because of the way the app is configured, but because maybe there's a component of the underlying infrastructure that's not optimized for the characteristics of that particular application.
Okay.
So for the self-driving data center, we want to look at things like self-healing. We want to look at things like self-optimizing. So if we look at self-tuning, for example, what about this machine is so unique that makes it a constraint while everything else seems to be fine? The way we would traditional ops would normally respond to that is migrate that machine off. Well, if we migrate that machine off, it becomes a problem somewhere else, right? So what we want to be able to do is analyze the operational characteristics of that machine, determine all the knobs and levers and advanced parameters that I could modify to make that machine or that application's life better. And that crosses the entire SDDC. Now, to be able to do that, I need to be able to not guess. I need to be able to actually predict. I need to then measure, and I need to be rewarded. So with everything that we talked about with Waymo, let's put that in an example in cloud management. So analytics clouds are becoming a thing. It's big with Google and Microsoft and AWS, et cetera. And we have our own analytics cloud. And the reason why it's so important for us is that when we go and talk to customers about predictive learning and reinforcement learning, we don't want to go and also sell the customer, although Dell might appreciate it, you know, racks and racks of GPUs, right? That's not our game. So we need to be able to crunch that data. But,
well, and like if I can interject here, one thing that's critical versus going back to the old, okay, I deployed VROps in my data center. If you know, your data center is what you have, the configuration options are yours, and particularly if you're a smaller environment, there may not be a lot to learn from. I mean, our ability to know that if we flip this one lever, it'll fix a memory leak or something like that. If I've got 12 hosts and I'm only processing data locally, you're never going to learn that.
Yeah.
In fact, you might learn that 100 milliseconds is normal disk latency. You might actually learn something bad if your scale is very small. And so this, I know some people are paranoid about sending their telemetry to the cloud. You know, what if North Korea gets a hold of our latency metrics? And I have to say, who knows? Maybe they'll help you. But this does raise the point of why this truly has to be a cloud solution versus that.
That's exactly right. I mean, the thing is, we need to do the math for our customers, right? And we're going to leverage, now taking that same scenario, if we expected our customers to be able to calculate and go through those algorithms on-prem or pay for it as a cloud consumer, it's just a massive undertaking and it's going to be stupidly expensive. It's just not the way to go. But if we can determine the right move for an on-prem customer and we can simulate the change in a simulation, what's called a sidecar, a simulation that essentially models that customer's environment based on all the levers we know about, all the application operational characteristics we know about, et cetera, simulate the outcome, simulate the fix, measure the outcome, determine whether it would be good, and then make the recommendation, but more importantly, just apply it. That means we're not trying things on a customer's production infrastructure. That means that when we make the change, we have this high level of confidence.
Yeah, it's authoritative. That, this is like we can say with a certain level of certainty, look, we've virtually gone through, just like the cars do, we've gone through the virtual driving. We know exactly what the outcome is going to be for the most part, and we can make an informed decision. That's awesome.
Yep, exactly right. And this 20 minutes is definitely not enough time to talk about this topic, but it's something that's very exciting. And just to summarize here, like why in cloud management it's such a critical thing is because we are going to leverage reinforcement learning. Reinforcement learning turns out to be a really great way to build a level of intelligence that is unique to environments. But as we learn from that environment, we want to be able to then build models that are specific to that customer's environment. And we want to be able to do that while not putting the onus of the GPU or of the neural networks on the customer themselves. So we're going to leverage transfer learning. So it's why I use the Waymo example, why I use the AlphaGo example. We're leveraging a lot of the same, or we're taking a lot of the same paths and same strategies here, but applying it to cloud management. And what you're going to see from us in the future is the self-driving data center. I call this the driver of the self-driving data center, right? We have self-tuning, self-installing, or self-day zero. We've got all the elasticity, the self-healing, the self-explaining, all of these characteristics that we can now bake in to an SDDC to really just take all the thinking out of it. And that's there's a lot of good there. So all I can say at this point is stay tuned for VMworld, and it's going to be a pretty exciting set of topics.
Oh yeah, as a matter of fact, we spoke to some of the folks from it wasn't actually vSAN Support Insight, it was the Skyline folks, and they've got predictive analytics. I mean, a lot of what you're talking about, and my assumption is that they're using some level of machine learning, right? Because they can predict they can predict when drives are going to fail. They can do all this prediction based on capacity and data center health. What other programs in VMware are using some sort of machine learning today?
Yeah, there's actually a lot. And Skyline's a good example. We have, Skyline is part of our self-driving data center vision. It plays a huge role there. It also plays a role in the self-escalating part. So, predictive support requirements and automating GSS end-to-end, but then entering that world, having a complete virtual but visible view of exactly what's happening. I mean, it changes a lot of aspects of what we do. But if you look at vSAN, right? vSAN's got a lot of that, and John's intimately knowledgeable here, the telemetry data that's being used for vSAN, right? There's a lot of analytics that goes into that. Virtualized operations and the ability to not just make a recommendation, but predict the outcome of the recommendation once it's been invoked, which is something that's been lacking, but we didn't know it was lacking until we determined that, hey, this should be a thing. And so as we evolve the algorithms there, now we're able to say, okay, well, ops is making this recommendation. We want to trigger VRA, for example, or vCenter to go make the recommendation. But what's the impact post-recommendation? We never used to take that into consideration until now.
Yeah.
Log intelligence with unstructured data, Wavefront, building that query-based system and being able to build those correlations is a very great example of where we use analytics in that monitoring platform and app ops, AppTelligent, or which is now Workspace ONE Intelligence, and then obviously Skyline. But you're going to see this basically become a portfolio standard, and in my opinion, it should get to a point where we stop talking about all the analytics going into it. It's just what our products do. And that's how we're going to know we're successful in making this all happen.
But in danger of sounding like one of those sci-fi movies, like are we afraid that robots are going to take our jobs? I mean, is the data center administrator, a thing of yesterday?
Well, so it's the VMware cloud that's going to take your jobs, not robots. No, I'm just kidding. No, so there's we are that enterprise company, right? We are VMware. And because of that, we understand the need to build trust relationships. So the entire RL model that we are leveraging for the self-driving data center is all built on trust, and it's built on time. And in fact, as you trust the system we'll be able to apply more and more intelligence. So it's actually a great relationship with the practitioners and the business and the enterprise. And at the end of the day, you could always govern and what we call, we do a lot of these decisions in a bounding box. So, hey, you said you're cool with me doing this. I'm just going to do it. Are you sure? Yes. Okay. Now I'm not going to ask you anymore. Hey, I've been doing this with your approval. You know, this is my 30th time doing it. You cool with me doing it on my own next time? Yeah, you know, I trust you're doing it right. And the other thing is, everything we change, all the decisions that are made, they're reinforced by the practitioner as well. Our own algorithms and reinforcement learning measures the outcome of any change to look at any potential negative impact on the environment I'm looking at as a whole. So we can rebuild the model and reapply it essentially on the fly. Otherwise, we wait for major significant changes to the environment or invocation from ops or others.
And can't we learn from one customer? So like if one customer finds some obscure flag that fixes LDP on this NIC or fixes a latency issue with the receiver for crashing, if one customer implements that fix, now the cloud knows that's something it should go model for other places that are having similar problems and make that, you know.
Yeah.
So recommendation.
So we do get into data sovereignty issues, as you are well aware, John. And I think it's becoming the status quo very quickly, right? When you consume any of these other analytics clouds, you know that your data, while obfuscated, is being used to help other customers, other people, other developers, whatever, do their jobs.
But if your competitive advantage is knowing which driver version is buggy, like...
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
So more importantly for VMware, right? When... You know, we're collecting the analytics of what do we keep doing over and over and over for self-tuning, for example. Hey, well, maybe we should just feed that into product and make it out of the box. And in fact, we do have some parameters that we can't configure out of the box. They're hidden advanced parameters. We can't configure out of the box on a global scale because they're not perfect for everybody. However, we see a vast majority of customers don't tweak that parameter in which... if they did tweak it, they would actually gain from some benefits. But the way these advanced parameters work is they could be temporary. So, hey, I've got this perfect fix for your problem, but only as that problem exists. So you can't sit there and manage this. You need analytics to be able to do all of that automatically. And that's exactly what we're going to be delivering.
Yeah, you need that learning part because it's more than just, you know, if else, right?
Right.
Exactly. What I think with that is like if on the storage side, you know, on the storage IO path is, when you start doing 4 megabyte writes, really large block, there might be something in the cache algorithm where we turn something off or we adjust some type of, you know, really low level nerd knob and how blocks are broken up or something. And normally that is going to cause a 10% performance hit. But if you're in this corner case workload, and that becomes your norm, then that should be turned, you know, that should be flipped.
It's funny, John, you started this conversation and I think we can end it on the same note. It's like you started the conversation saying, these human drivers, you know, I really like the automated driver that has all this informed information is already making these informed decisions based on real data. And it seems like, you know, when I asked you the question of can we trust this, it seems like I think we're coming to a day soon where we can not only trust self-driving cars more than we can humans, but, you know, we can also trust self-driving data centers as opposed to humans because obviously we make mistakes.
Yeah, and we're all in this industry and we know that, you know, if I want to trust an algorithm to take 50% of my workload off my plate, I still want to be able to have complete visibility into everything that's been done and be able to report on it, be able to talk about what it's done to our KPIs, be able to show the benefits of what we're doing, but it's still in my realm. But the reality is that technology isn't a competitor to us humans. Technology, in this case, is an absolute essential for you to be able to compete as a business and enterprise. And because we just cannot scale or do some of these things or do them right anyway, unless there's somebody sitting next to me giving me a cookie every time I do the right thing as reinforcement learning and as my reward, it's just not feasible to expect us to just be these switch togglers, right?
Oh, yeah.
We need machines to do that or machine learning and algorithms to do that for us, but we need to do it carefully, in a trusted way, and governed when needed.
Nice. Well, looking at, you know, other areas where we've had automation and everyone said it was going to take all the jobs. I mean, ATMs were going to kill the bank teller. There's more bank tellers than ever. Now there's more smaller branches. It helps scale. They do more high value transactions. I think the jobs are safe for a while.
Oh, yeah. So this is a 30-minute podcast. That was awesome. Jed, you're going to be at VMworld. Are you going to be doing... I know you did an awesome keynote that we're going to actually share on the show notes of this page, but do you have anything in store for VMworld around machine learning?
Yep. We will be doing a breakout on the algorithms and the project code names that that are going into a lot of this. So myself and a peer... we'll be doing that, as well as look for main stage action on hopefully the day two with Ray. We'll see some nice announcements coming around here. And then I do have a breakout, but it's actually unrelated. It's a little bit related, but mostly unrelated. And a couple other things. So yeah, it's going to be a busy one. But you're definitely going to hear the noise, and it's going to be a good, confident focus, not just a sales focus. So I think we're going to look forward to a lot of really great topics at VMworld.
Very nice. By the way, John, we got a session at VMworld for the Virtually Speaking podcast.
Sweet.
We are literally going to be doing a breakout session. It's going to be a live Virtually Speaking podcast. We're going to have multiple guests, and there's going to be some surprises. Nobody will leave empty-handed, and it's going to be a great session. So if you are going to VMworld and you're listening to this podcast, come on, join the fun. We're going to have a blast, and you're going to love it.
I would like to preface a warning. You will need to wear a raincoat on the first two. We're going Gallagher style.
You're going Gallagher. I love it. Sweet. All right, Jed, thank you so much for joining. This is like your third time on, so you are an honorary member of the show. Come on anytime you want.
Great. Absolutely. Definitely. And look forward to catching up at VMworld.
Yeah, we will. We'll see you there. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Jad Alzeen for joining us this week. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
Enough of this jibber jabber.